online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sundog the Podcast. It's the show where we talk about the news, trends, and best practices of internet marketing, web 2.0 development, as well as traditional media and technology. And hopefully by the end of the show, we're going to show you how you can tie all these things together to help improve your company's bottom line. You're listening to episode number 15. Today, we're calling it Open Spaces and Faces. And we have a couple newbies on the show today. We're going to start with Kim Sherseth. How you doing, Kim?
Doing great.
Kim, why don't you tell the folks what you do here at Sundog?
I am the training program manager at Sundog, so I coordinate all the internal training, and I'm also putting together the external training services.
Very cool. The other new guest on the show today is Melanie Gilbert.
Hi, Lon.
How are you?
I'm awesome.
And what do you do here at Sundog?
I'm a project manager for software and IT projects.
Very cool.
Yes, it is.
And a veteran of the show, Eric Fish.
Howdy.
Ista.
Here I am.
Senior creative upstairs on 6th.
Yes.
And I'm Lon Keller, senior editor here at Sundog Studios. And Kim, we're going to kind of let you run the show here today a little bit. We're going to talk about social networks, Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, et cetera, and how they interact with businesses and what's considered appropriate or non-appropriate use.
Sure, thanks. This session, what it came from, is really a netiquette session that I did a few months back, and about being proper online, you know, email, IMs, things of that nature. And but I just really kind of skimmed the surface on social networks, and I wanted to give more attention to it because it's really becoming a predominant thing that we use personally and professionally. I think we know how we use, you know, Facebook and Twitter and things of that nature personally in life, being connected with our friends and family and sharing photos and things of that nature. But, you know, stepping into this realm, how we use these social networks professionally is kind of really a new thing. These social networks are really new overall because Facebook's been only around since, 2004 and Twitter 2006. So, you know, 4 or 2 years old. You know, this is really new, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, new horizons here that we need to explore with this. and so I started thinking about how does this affect us? You know, we like to use these things personally to keep in touch, but sometimes it crosses over in good ways and in bad ways. And so I wanted to, you know, make people go, pause a little bit and start thinking about how can we use these things to our advantage and also to check ourselves sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that's really what this came out of.
Yeah, it's, social networks can be kind of fun and dangerous for people like me because I don't have a filter.
Yeah.
I'm kind of an open book myself, so yeah.
And it's been really fun because exploring who I am has been, or at least exploring how I present who I am, and the audience, becoming more aware of that audience, has been a big part of that journey, personally and professionally. So that's a really good. Like, we had a breakfast the other week with our CEO, Brent. And Brent was talking about how he thinks it's great. We're a technology company. We're a marketing company. We're on cutting edge. We have a really active Twitter and Facebook community here at Sundog, which is pretty cool, that we're comrades. We work together and we play together. He said, but, you know, some of you have clients on your Facebook, and they're like, why are you guys updating your status during the day? And I was like, maybe that Twitter feed that I have going to my Facebook isn't such a good idea. Gives the illusion or the impression that I'm not working.
You're on there constantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been kind of a few things where I'm like, oh, maybe that's not an appropriate topic, or maybe the time that I'm using it, or how the frequency for the time of day is a little bit in question. But,
you know, that brings to my mind are these default settings in all these social networks, where most times when you set up an account on, you know, an Amazon or wherever else, the default is private, you know, lock it down. But these social networks are the exact opposite. So, you know, when you go and set up your profile out there, it defaults to being open to public to everybody. And you don't think about that right away until you start getting some feedback from people thinking, well, how did you get a hold of me? Mm-hmm. Or what'd you make, you know, mm-hmm. how'd you contact me? And you start to realize that you're connected in ways that you didn't realize.
Yeah.
So it's not just your first inner ring that you're, you know, friends with or connections with. It has this real ripple effect.
Yep. Right. I started making my profiles private after someone said, hey, why did you say so-and-so was constipated? And I was like, how did you find out about that?
No, I try to be very careful when I work on Twitter and, you know, just keep things kind of light and, mm-hmm. and fun. But at first when I was using Twitter, I didn't realize that anything that you write, you can Google search it and it, mm-hmm. and it comes up. I mean, you search for your name and it's like every Twitter post you've ever had if you're on the public
timeline. I
didn't
know that.
Yeah.
I may go Google myself.
You should. You should really. And that's actually a good idea for anybody. You go Google yourself once in a while and see what's out there. Because, you know, if you're looking for a job, if you're out, you know, if you have a job, I mean, just mm-hmm. seeing what people know about you, because anybody can go Google you and see some of these things that you may not even be aware of there. So yeah, after that, I mean, I hadn't put anything out there that I thought would get me into trouble by just to be safe, let's just keep it tight. And so you know, I took myself off the public timelines. Like, nobody needs to know what I'm talking about other than my friends anyway.
Kim, you mentioned in your tech talk the other day that employers are using these things more and more for just what Eric mentioned. They'll Google the name and see what's out there about that person.
Yeah, I think people need to be aware that they may have to answer for some of the content that's on their social networks, especially for job interviews. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to especially apply for a job that your credibility may be questioned, you know, a nurse or, you know, security officer or something like that, people are going to do background checks on you. And that background check may also include looking you up on your Facebook mm-hmm. or wherever else you may be out there, your MySpace or whatnot. And they may ask you, or they may not even, you know, ask you to come in to interview because of some of the content that may be out there. So, you know, it's going back and, you know, I guess being a critical thinker about this, you mm-hmm. know, who do you want to share in your network out there? What is appropriate to share out there? And be prepared to answer to some of that content that you're mm-hmm. sharing. So.
Exactly. Well, I heard an interesting story. Some friends of mine were trying to rent out a house, and some guys had talked to them, and they seemed like all right guys, but then they found them on their Facebook page, and they looked like real party animals.
Uh-oh.
So they ended up not renting to them just because they were afraid of what might happen. Mm-hmm. So
That's interesting.
How mm-hmm. hard is it to get back some of that, you know, questionable content that's out there on you if you wanted to do it?
Sometimes it can be quite difficult. You know, majority of users aren't very conscious. They don't Google themselves, as I heard you guys saying. And they try, you know, one story in particular that I found, they found their information they had on a certain account. It was like a radio account that they had a music account. And it had incorrect information about their contact information, their home address and whatnot. It was some other relatives of theirs. And I guess that person's relative or their relative didn't even live at that address for 10 years or more. And so they tried to contact this company and say, you know, this is incorrect. Can you change this or remove it? And that company was sold then to Yahoo later. And so they lost control of this information completely. And so there's incorrect contact information. And why is that important is because that's really the number one reason why people search for you is for your contact information. So it does, you think it's a simple little thing, right? But it's really the biggest thing that people search for you on. And what's also interesting is that people don't Google themselves as much as they Google other people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you never know who's looking for you out there or how they'll come across your information.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys tired of being, you know, you guys mentioned that your profiles essentially are an open book. Are you tired of perfect strangers coming up to you and saying, please be my friend?
I haven't had any real perfect strangers.
I don't get any. Well, I get some of those.
You're hot.
Yeah.
And those are pretty easy just to delete, ignore.
Exactly. Yeah. You pretty much know if it's a spam thing or something like that. But I haven't. I mean, I found it really helpful for me. I'm terrible at maintaining communication with people.
I
am a horrible friend. I mean, it's like if I don't work with
really
you
is.
Or I don't see you on a daily basis, I forget you exist and I don't call, I don't write. I'm just a bad, bad person. But like Facebook, there's friends of mine from high school that I have gotten in contact with again. And we've been talking and it's been great. I mean, really caught up on stuff. And then I get little bits of their daily life. You know, I see their status updates, things like that. I see photos of where they've been. And
it's almost
it's like,
easier
oh, here,
to
there's
maintain.
Your family. How's your family
yeah.
doing? Yeah. And it's so somebody like me that's just scatterbrained and can't you know, keep things going.
I just like to think that you're busy. You have a lot of irons in the fire.
I am. Yeah, that's exactly it.
There's a video out on YouTube, Kim. You brought it up during your session the other day. It was produced, it looks like it was produced by the BBC. Mm-hmm. Basically, it portrays Facebook as a reality scenario. I'm just going to play a little bit of the audio here. And I won't play the whole thing. The whole thing is 2 minutes long. We got a guy pounding on a door.
Hello?
Poke! Edward Baxter!
It's really well done.
Oh, we sat next to each other in maths. We didn't get on, remember? Yeah. Do you want to be my friend?
What?
Do you want to be my friend, confirm or ignore?
All right.
Great.
I think the British accent makes it even that much better.
Do you want to skip this step? We met at school. Okay, but how about if we
All right, well, this goes on and on, but I think you're kind of getting the idea.
Yeah.
It portrays it very well as to, you know, what the real life situation is with Facebook and these other networks.
I think one of the differences between Facebook and Twitter, which are the two that we see most frequently, I guess, in our own experience, MySpace has kind of faded out. As far as I know, I left MySpace in favor of Facebook because MySpace just was getting really gross and had way too many ads. And it was a dirty interface, and it was a gross experience. But Twitter seems to be, it's that focus on microblogging where you're trying to push out some content, something witty, something to remember, something, an invitation, something like that. You have some of that in Facebook, but Facebook is much more social because it's pictures, it's music, it's I like these clothes. You can post anything with all sorts of browser plugins. Post this to Facebook. Delicious is another one I use a lot. And I can go to Delicious and I can find, just look for any phrase and see what everyone else is saving or what the hot topics are. And I think that's one of the bigger differences.
I think you point out a really good how these things are used and what is important to the audience out there that are using these tools. Because, in traditional marketing, like a magazine or a TV show, the company is trying to get you to focus on them. Pay attention to me, listen about this product, whatever it may be. But in social networks, your friends are what important, right? What is, what is Fish saying about, product X or this, new movie or a book or whatever. And that's what's important to you, what he's thinking, what your friends are thinking. Mm-hmm. And so you have this whole network. And
politically, too.
Yes.
I think, especially this time of year, politics is a huge part of the discussion going on both Twitter and Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were talking about you follow the Twitter.
Hack the debate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's, it basically turns the debate into a spectator sport. Mm-hmm. And not only do you see your own timeline with your friends, but they put the public timeline, all comments on Hack the Debate run across the bottom screen of each of the presidential and vice presidential debates. And it's just been thought-provoking and humorous. So,
nice. Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out. I've seen it up there on Twitter a number of times. I haven't actually clicked through to that yet.
Twitter's added those keywords, too, at the top. So you can actually, it picks up the hottest phrases.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so, at the top, any given day, you can look at the top of your homepage on Twitter and see what the hottest topics are. Because the focus really is on the content. It's supposed to be about microblogging. And I've actually started clicking those links to what is that? Just to learn a little bit more about why is it such a hot topic? What are people talking about? Mm-hmm. So, kind of like a Delicious light type thing.
Yeah. So was Plumber Joe up there today?
Joe Sixpack and Plumber Joe are both up there. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yep.
I want to move back a little bit to how businesses can take advantage of these networks, and one of the more popular ones among the business community now is the LinkedIn site, and it's basically becoming like sort of a resume dumping ground, to put sort of a generic label on it. It's kind of advantageous for someone who's out there searching for a job, in my opinion, because you give the employer your resume, and by law they really can't follow up on or do any investigation like with a former employer other than the fact that yes, you worked there or no, you didn't. And beyond that, an employer really isn't legally obligated or isn't legally allowed to say anything beyond that, whether they were a good employee or not.
That brings up a point that I've noticed on LinkedIn. Why is everyone so afraid to give a recommendation? Like you can do a recommendation where you can put in two or three sentences about Lon's great to work with. He always delivered his projects on time and he had a great attitude. I see so few of those. There's one person in my LinkedIn network that gives everyone a recommendation. And he's like the happy guy. Yeah. And, but nobody else will do it. And I don't know if there's what that reticence is about or why people are reluctant to do that. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I read one thing that people are reluctant because I think they're scared of, showing, maybe they just don't think themselves as a great writer. Mm-hmm. But also they encourage people to give a recommendation themselves to someone in their own network first and hope that somebody will reciprocate that recommendation. So, you want to be authentic about it. You just don't want to blast, everybody and hoping that you'll catch somebody to give you a recommendation back. But it's one way if you're trying to, get that interaction out there. Mm-hmm. So.
Are you guys in my network?
No, I don't LinkedIn. Even use LinkedIn.
Really?
No?
I'll send you an invite.
Okay. I've gotten a couple invites before. Yeah.
I was just sitting around going, I could add to my connection.
Yeah. Will you be my friend?
You be my friend.
Confirm or ignore.
I think LinkedIn also can be really good for research. If you're out there trying, this new software tool or whatever it is that you're trying to get more information about. I just recently linked to a group for ASTD, which is a really widely known training community.
I saw that
there.
Update, yeah.
And they have just fabulous information out there. Now I'm getting these little kind of messages from them, a podcast is going on or webinars going on.
Oh, yeah, I get PMI updates now, project management. Yeah,
and I love it. And it's, a community out there. And I feel like, because I'm a trainer of one here at Sundog. And so I don't get that network, feeling of talking about training topics and whatnot. And so now I have this whole virtual network out there that I can go out and talk about these discussions, troubleshoot. Hey, have you used this before? How did it work for you? Anybody have some, free forms out there for something like that? Mm-hmm. And I think it can be quite powerful.
It kind of goes back to, a little bit of the history of how social networks began. And I'm not just talking about the last few years, sort of the Facebook area. It basically goes back to when nerd user groups got started way back when, just support lists and things like that.
I used to go to networking breakfasts back in the dark ages before we had the intertubes, and you would exchange these little 3x2 square pieces of paper that had your name and phone number and stuff on them. Okay. And I think that there's a huge similarity with what we do on Facebook now, but it's just much more personalized. You've got pictures, you can choose themes, you have more data, more information about who you are as a person, and so because we want to make that character assessment like right away, like what is this person and what value do they have personally or professionally. Mm-hmm. So,
before the show, we were talking a little bit about how marketers can take advantage of these social networks. And Mel, I think you were talking about you were looking for a pair of boots.
Yeah, I posted a pair of boots that I liked to my I have a plugin in my Firefox called I can't remember, but just go to add-ons and you can find, I know what it is, Shareaholic. And basically it's one little plugin and you can just click a button and you can post it to Delicious or Reddit or Facebook and Twitter and several others. And so I added it to my Facebook status, just posted it. It has a picture and a link to the boots and I was like, yeah, birthday present coming up, And now all of a sudden my advertising is all about shoes and boots on, I can be playing Bar Fight or some other application on Facebook and I'm looking at these really detailed campaigns about my music preferences the clothes or project management type things. And it's just amazing how it just pulls things in.
Yeah. I've actually been clicking on the ad.
Me too. Me too.
An
and I am no, not an ad clicker. I agree. But they have the pictures. So they're very, very tempting. I never click on Google AdWords or anything like that. It's just text. But when there's my favorite band and lead singer, or there's a, shiny boots.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll click on that.
Speaking of shoes, reminds me of the president and CEO of Zappos.com, which is the big online shoe store. And he uses Twitter a lot. And they say that one big use for Twitter is for to humanize the CEO.
Didn't you say he was the number one, person, the most followed person?
The most followed CEO on Twitter. And it humanizes the CEO or that top executive ranking. Maybe that executive doesn't really like to blog or maybe they're not that great of a blogger. Mm-hmm. And this allows them a format to connect with their audience out there and maybe a much broader audience, too, that they may not even have known about. And, you know, it makes them more like a human rather than just that stiff suit that's, mm-hmm. you know, on top for that.
Yeah. Well, that's why I love Twitter, because it's just the short bursts, and that's yeah. that's how my mind functions. I mean, I've tried blogging here before, and I failed miserably at it, because so I got to sit down and think about it for a day and a half. But I have the random thoughts that come to me throughout the day. It's like, oh, hey, I found this cool thing. Boom, out, mm-hmm. you know? And I know I told the story last time we talked about social networking and the whole Mario Kart deal, where I was at home one Sunday, didn't know what was coming out. I saw a tweet about it, and I was on it out the door like 5 minutes after that happened. And
I've done stuff like that too.
I'm back and forth. I'm texting. I'm Twittering. I'm all over the place. And before I know, there's like four people in line with me, and that's all because of it was mm-hmm. Twitter. And yeah, so you know, just. Yeah, I like the small bursts a lot yeah. better than the big things. So I can understand with like CEOs, things like
it's
that.
It's funny about humanizing. I was telling Kim this story earlier. I'm a big fan of Merlin Mann. Some people may know him. He started published some stuff about Inbox Zero, and he trains corporations like Google and mm-hmm. things like that on efficiency and productive workflows. And I read his blog. I love his blog at 43 Folders. And I found out my boyfriend is a web developer, so, and also into like a lot of the IT stuff. And he's like, oh yeah, you can follow Merlin Mann on Twitter. So I followed him, and I was like, oh my God, this guy is... He is so mean. How can he say these things about people he doesn't even know at the grocery store? And so I actually stopped following him, because I can learn from him in the blog format. But when he's being a human, I don't like him very much. And in fact, there's so many people, I guess, that said that, like, DM'd him, direct messaged mm-hmm. him and said, you know, hey, you're kind of a jerk. He actually created a new persona called Nice Merlin. So you can follow Merlin Man, right. or you can follow Nice Merlin.
Wow.
So I'm thinking of trying Nice Merlin out, but it is an interesting thing about humanizing that face.
Maybe I should do that. Split it. Angry fish.
Yeah. Sid Vicious.
Sid Vicious.
That is something to keep in mind, though, as a company.
Get that domain now. Yeah. Before someone else grabs it.
Don't post this until I get that, would you?
It does make people think, though, if you're going to put a profile out there mm-hmm. or do a Twitter as, you know, a CEO or whoever you may be in your business, or create a profile out on Facebook to make it more personal, it's something you have to maintain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can't be excited about it for a couple of months and yeah. then just kind of fade away, because you'll lose your audience. People mm-hmm. will stop listening.
That's a really good point from the marketing standpoint. Mm-hmm. One of my coworkers, his wife is a web marketer mm-hmm. as well for a local clothing manufacturer or distributor, and she was going to create a persona in Facebook, and then they started really thinking about it, and she would have to update it mm-hmm. at least once a day to mm-hmm. keep it fresh yeah. and starting a group and posting pictures. And that's a lot of work, and it's not
another job.
And it's not 8 to 5.
Yeah.
You know, you would be thinking it's all the time, because mm-hmm. if you're going to create a persona, you have to be doing your homework at night,
right.
or here I am 3 o'clock in the morning, can't sleep, that kind of, or mm-hmm. did you go see this movie? You have mm-hmm. to incorporate things from the real world, not just the work world. Mm-hmm. So it was a really interesting thought exercise about personas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very true.
Fish, I know you and Mel, to some extent, you as well, when you're on some of your free time, Fish, your vacation this summer, I was able to follow a little photo journey of what you were doing.
I've become quite the documentarian. Yeah, I shot 815 photos and videos on a 1 week trip to Montana and Idaho, mm-hmm. and a good majority ended up in Facebook.
Montana look exciting.
I could only post 16 photos to an album. That irritated me. My new favorite thing to do is caption photos. So, but yeah, going through and it's great. I mean, it keeps, like I said before, I'm terrible at telling people about things and mm-hmm. keeping people up to date on what's mm-hmm. going on with me. And this way I can just dump it out there and people see it and they're excited about it and they go through. I had so many people come up to me at work and say, oh God, I just loved reading all those captions and going through. I felt like I was on the trip with you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah,
exactly.
Didn't you love that? So it's like you could almost, you know, relive the vacation with that person. You hadn't even told the story to us.
Yeah. I felt like I had to take PTO when I came back. I felt like it was on vacation with you. Is that a big part of the future of social networking? Is this continued explosive growth in the mobile space?
It has to be.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be. I would die without a data plan on my phone. just because I have faced the Facebook application, by the way, is killer for your mobile phone.
Yeah.
I have mine on my BlackBerry and I love it.
They did a really good job.
Yeah. It's a great interface and it works really well. It actually is faster than either of the browsers I have on my Pearl. Yeah. But then I use my browsers for Twittering and I text Twitter. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of impaired. I haven't gotten TwitPic to work yet.
Really?
Yeah. So I might need some help with that.
Because we haven't mentioned TwitPic. It's a picture version of Twitter, you know, and I've been using that a lot. I've been using my camera phone more than ever because I'll be somewhere and pop, put it up there and you can, again, just share with the people that weren't able to make it to whatever you're going to or, you know, get things.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
And the Facebook plugin for your phone, actually, you can take a picture and then in your menu, it will be send to Facebook. So it's really great because then I can take the picture and with one click, I have a little dialog box up. I can caption it and it goes to my mobile uploads album. Mm-hmm. And that's fun. So when I figure TwitPic out, I can spam twice as much.
Well, and there's another marketing opportunity too for, I mean, like event planning, things like that. If you have a concert going on, I mean, if you have individuals there specifically to take pictures of the event and be posting them to TwitPic, things like that. I mean, people that may not have gone. I mean, there's been things happening at a concert that I hadn't planned on going to. And all of a sudden I started seeing photos on TwitPic. Well, now I want to be there.
Yeah.
And so I got up and I left and I went.
Yeah.
And
Facebook has like some of the local presentation companies that bring in different concerts. Now they're on Facebook and you can follow them. So you get more of a stream. You don't have to wait to see a poster downtown somewhere. You actually get updates from the Facebook group that Black Crowes are going to be at the venue or something like that in November, which I think is really awesome. And then there's a lot of other things with Twitter that I see, like local restaurants, the soup of the day. I get a Twitter every day from the first in Delhi about, what was it? Today was cheeseburger and something else, you know. I think there's really a lot of opportunities to stay connected with your customer base for B2C type businesses.
It's useful information too. It's going to make people go out. Like Fish, you're saying, I actually got up out of my chair and left the house on a couple of occasions. And I think that's hard to do. I mean, you often don't see a commercial and you jump out of your seat.
I've never done that with TV. Sorry. No.
I may have done it for food a couple of times. Ice cream. That looks good.
Well, it obviously shows what the power of these networks can do. Where do you see them evolving next?
Hand implants, chips in our brains.
RFID, yep.
That's not too far off. My husband did a report on this. It was for grad school. And he kind of scared his whole class. It was RFIDs, and that's what he talked about. You know, there might be a little chip, you know, RFID in your pants, and you walk past the store that you bought it from, and you get a little tweet in your phone saying, hey, we got this on sale. Come on in.
Because we have two nanotechnology companies that are producing chips like that right now in Fargo alone. Mm-hmm. You know that's not going to be too far away.
No.
But I think it's just going to keep continuing to develop people's personal brands. Yep. I mean, you know, Sundog as a company has a brand. However, each one of us here, and especially as more and more people get into the social networking things, I mean, we've all got our own little personal brand out there. And it's something you have to protect. And like a company needs to protect their brand. It's going to be... we're going to see a lot more of it, I think. But the whole purpose of this talk about how to protect that and be smart about it, and we got to stay vigilant and how to use this technology. Yeah.
I liked what Kim said about just making it a practice once or twice a year, just to go in, Google yourself, go in and clean things up, and look at that. I have to just go back a little bit. Have you guys looked at BrightKite at all? Because
I looked at it. I signed up for it. I'm in there. I haven't used it.
Because if you
really
had that chip technology with BrightKite, because basically BrightKite is like Twitter. You can post. You basically have a network and you can do a microblog. But what it is you set your account up and you also set up all these locations. And so you have like this geographic. It's like Google Maps, basically, and here's my address of where I live, here's the address of where I work, here's my favorite bars, here's my restaurants, and so you have all these locations. And when you're posting, it'll post where you're at. So you don't say, hey, I'm at the fort, it's 2 for Tuesday. You just say, hope the gang see you soon, and it'll say where you're at right there in your post. And so it makes stalking really easy.
I was going to say, a lot of parents would like that for their teenagers. Yeah.
Well, that's why I bought my son his cell phone, was so I could know where he's at. But, you know, that it's a good, it's like all technology. It's a an asset and a liability at the same time. And we do have to be careful and diligent and thoughtful. Nobody really thought about Twitter when it started. It coined the whole phrase fail whale because of its whimsical little 404 page not found, like when its servers would get brought down.
I was too many tweets.
Yeah, I mean, I got on Twitter that when it started, first thing in 2006. And I remember seeing that fail whale all the time. And I was like, you know, but now you see it on T-shirts. You see it in the recent technology conference that we had here. That one of the symposiums was actually on how not to have the fail whale, how to avoid the fail whale. And so now it's really part of our lexicon in when we talk about ventures.
Lon, do we have time for my one Facebook bad idea? You go right ahead. Okay. So like I said, my life is an open book. And I'm a junkie when it comes to posting photos. And what I love about it is the comments that I get back. There's nothing better than getting that notification that says, somebody posted a comment on your photo.
It is satisfying.
Go check it out. People love me. And so I decided to make my status update a little bit interactive. And the other day, I didn't know what to put down for myself. It was just kind of like a meh sort of day. And I thought, oh, let's spice this up a bit. And it says, Eric is, and I went blank. And I said, fill in the blank, people. Let's go. And I started getting some fun comments, some, you know, maybe questionable responses. But for the most part, it was really funny. And quite a few people, put in their two cents. So I did it again because I was trying to decide what to do that night. And so I said, Eric should blank tonight. And again, come on, people, what should I be doing? I have no idea what I want to do. And that one spiraled out of control very quickly.
Their 2 cents quickly turned into a dollar.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you have a lot of creative friends that also have 6 senses of humor, you don't want to leave an open blank. And that one went downhill really fast. And that's like the first thing I have ever deleted from Facebook. Usually I leave things up there. But this just came on the heels of us being cautioned on how we use our Facebook at work. This is not how I'm going to start out this cautionary warning.
my friend Laura, when our CEO decided to get on Facebook and he was like requesting, you know, confirm or ignore, would you like Brent Tyken to be your friend, you know? And I thought really hard about that. and I went over and I asked my friend Laura, who makes me look really conservative, and I said, what are you going to do about Brent's request? And she goes, I added him and then I just emailed him and said, don't accept this if you don't want to know. because that's the personal life. And then one of the things is Twitter is where our professional life is. So Laura and I both, you know, I think people are just sort of migrating towards that division of here's my professional persona and here's my personal persona.
Very cool. Well, Fish, Kim, Mel, we're definitely having you three back at some future. Maybe when the next social network comes out, we can go over that one again. But this was a great show, and I thank you for being with us today very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
If anybody out there in the world has questions for us here at Sundog, you can send comments to Sundog, the podcast. Audio comments are also welcome. You can also give us a phone call at 1-888-9-SUNDOG. That's 888-978-6364. I'm Lon Keller. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time on Sundog, the podcast.
Do you want to be my friend, confirm or ignore?